39 down, one to go.
Yeah, well, I was looking forward to media day, like the Super Bowl media day, so I could say I'm just here not to get fined, but this is my shining moment instead, so let's go.
Match preview versus Seattle Sounders FC.
Happy Friday. It's TFC pitch side on the eve of MLS Cup. Yes, it's December 9th, and we're still talking about your Toronto FC, and how great is that? Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, and today we have a very special guest on TFC pitch side. It is Julie Stewart-Banks. Thanks for joining us in studio, no less.
It's a pleasure to be here, especially back in the Great White North and God's country and Toronto, you know. Feel right at home.
God's country. Everybody feels right at home here, except when it's extremely cold out. Like, I saw you tweeted the picture. I was at the Kia training grounds yesterday, too. But Sebastian Giovinco, like, God bless him. And, you know, he grew up in Torino. It's not that freezing there, but it's a pretty cold city. It's not like this. And he was dressed up like a mummy yesterday.
You could just see like little slits for his eyes. His head was wrapped. You could tell he had tons of layers on. And as you said, he's played in cold climates before, but even seeing him during regular games in the fall, he's got his gloves on at least, you know, so could be pretty difficult for him.
Yeah. Well, you know what the crazy part was? We're talking about Giovinco and the cold, and he was wrapped up like a winter mummy because it was crazy. And you can't escape. You know it's Giovinco because he's what, about 5'4"?
Yeah.
But Armando Cooper was the one wearing shorts, and he's from Panama.
I know. And Nicholas Adaro, too. He said he was wearing shorts training out there. A lot of them have played in these cold temperatures. I just wonder, Roman Torres, I mean, he's never played in anywhere as cold as this.
Yeah, so hopefully Jozy Altidore can push him around a little bit, bully him a little bit like he's been bullying everybody else. It's going to be a crazy game. And, we were just talking about this before we started the show, Julie, but you are from this fair city. And so you kind of know the sports scene a little bit. And now working for Fox, I imagine that you have to kind of like give the lowdown to all your coworkers on just like what a championship game in this city actually means. Because as much as the Blue Jays and Raptors have had success lately, there's never been an actual championship game here.
Yeah, I explained that to our play-by-play guy, John Strong, in the fact that how many professional teams there are in the city versus how many championships, at least over the last, 50 years?
The Blue Jays, we still love it. Yeah, 25 years ago, you know.
Always remembering Joe Carter, you know, but we need someone new. And I found it interesting. I find that Jozy Altidore has sort of quickly become this Toronto icon. You know, he has been known as this U.S. soccer star, but you see Jose Bautista tweeting at him, people calling him the Doug Gilmore of soccer. And I thought it was kind of interesting that he could sort of write his place in Toronto history. But speaking with Greg Vanney yesterday, he said, you know, no one remembers the finalist in an MLS Cup. You do if you remember the game. But he's like, we have to get over that little bit more of the line because or else all of this is for nothing. And then the fans, they're going to turn on your team even more. If you get all the way here with the amount of money you've spent and how close, and you're hosting it and you don't win it, well, people aren't going to be happy.
No. Well, you're a Torontonian, so you do feel that void of not having a championship. And you look at all the teams and everything that's going on. You had to go, you were speaking to us earlier, and you were saying you had to go all the way around the map to come and watch and basically work with soccer in Toronto. Can you explain
that? Yeah, I thought that was so ironic in that I was born in Toronto. I moved to Winnipeg for Fox Soccer Report, moved to Regina for CTV, been at Fox Sports One the last 3.5 years, and I had to do all that to be able to cover TFC in an MLS Cup final.
In your home city.
I took the scenic route for this process.
Took the scenic route, and so, like, I mean, your allegiances may lie with Toronto here. I can't imagine. Like, I saw that you painted your nails there a little bit. Yeah. I could see them right now.
I know. Oh, so this is very strategic. So I've got the TFC logo, MLS, Seattle Sounders as well. But I put the cup on the Sounders side.
Uh-oh.
Because first of all, everyone, you know, they know I'm from Toronto. Yeah. And everyone reads very much into the placement of the nail polish on the nails. So tons of people have tweeted me saying, I'm glad you put the cup on the Sounders side. And I did that because I'm trying, you know,
There was a thought there.
Oh, yeah. This was planned out. But I pride myself, obviously, being unbiased. And I have really really enjoyed covering Seattle this year. That was the first game we did against Kansas City beginning of the year. seen them go through the mud and have to really battle through that to then the change around to doing Brian Schmetzer's first game as head coach. And I remember even talking with him before that. This is a guy that bleeds Seattle. You know, he's been there. He's grown up. He's the USL days, NASL days, everything. He has been a part of this. And the team has been exciting to cover as well. You know, you see no Clint Dempsey, but you see Morris and Ladero. And
well, Ladero just like showed up. He's like this year's Sebastian Giovinco. Like he gets 100 goals and assists every game. It's incredible.
We're like, we told him, like, this is what it's supposed to be like every year. You know? Come in and you're the MVP or whatever. No, but both teams, it's been great to cover them. And Schmetzer was very quick to say they're not a Cinderella story. You know, they've made the playoffs every single year. They've been a good team. They just weren't playing well for the first half of the season. We're able to figure it out. And again, people kind of forget, hey, Clint Dempsey's not even here.
Yeah.
And he actually is physically here. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where he watches the game and whatnot. But I think this is best MLS Cup I've ever seen.
Well, you were saying 20 points in the first 20 games for Seattle Sounders, then the coaching change and everything. And Brian Schmetzer got a little heated at the press conference.
He didn't get heated.
Well, it
looked like he didn't like that question.
I think the question was, you know,
it was kind of, yeah.
It was a very Kurt Larson question. Let's be honest.
We saw Schmetzer right after that, and we did sort of our one-on-one meetings, and he said, I don't know if you guys saw this press conference, but this guy from Toronto asked me this question. We're like, oh, we know exactly.
And so he was heated.
Oh, yeah. But that's also Curtis Larson's MO, you know, trying to kind of get, you know, that could be a story too.
Kurt owns it. So like, good on him. That's what he does.
Yeah. But even speaking with Brad Evans yesterday, he said, you can't dismiss what like Siggy Schmid has done in laying the groundwork and getting these guys. He might've not been the guy to get them to play at the level they're at now, which is, they talk so highly about Schmetzer being that player's coach and not having too much of a transition. Once he came in, he was the guy already that would go over and put his arm around them after a loss or whatever. And they were always so close with him. And from the vibe I get, he's let them just sort of, you know, I'll give you guys notes, I'll do whatever, but you guys know how to play soccer. Yeah. So.
And that's the key too, right? He didn't have to build that connection with the players, so they were willing to play for him. Mm-hmm.
And he definitely put in his work to get this interim tag taken off. He thought, okay, what is this guy going to have to do to be head coach of this team? And it seemed as though Garth Lagerwey was holding off as long as he possibly could. And then as soon as they're rolling in playoffs, he kind of got to give him it.
Now all the way to the MLS Cup final where they haven't been before. I mean, it's pretty obvious you had to give it to him. He kind of he has this like history teacher feel to him.
No, yeah, we joke that he sort of looks like a math teacher on the sidelines.
Totally.
And, you know, he'll be holding a pen in his hand and sort of like yelling at the players with it, like a long trench coat on as well. So whereas Greg Vanney sort of has this, not to say anything bad about Schmetzer, but he has this really super cool, calm, almost like fashion model coming in with his suit, sort of different vibes.
Leslie Jones thinks he's hot and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Leslie Jones thinks a lot of players and coaches in the MLS are hot.
That was the best. She's like, where have all these guys been? Nobody told me about this.
And then she's wearing Seattle jerseys on SNL. That's, I don't know how much Toronto liked that.
Did they give her a jersey? Was that?
Probably, because I would assume that if Colorado had made it, she was a big Tim Howard fan.
Big Tim Howard fan. A little bit more so than Vanny, I would think.
Yeah. Fear the beard.
Yeah.
That beard is good on Tim Howard. But, it sucks for Colorado. They had a nice season. I did, like, when you mentioned Clint Dempsey, I'm just thinking, like, would he make a hip-hop song on this, like, Seattle run as he's on the sideline? He has that old album of his that he did. No, probably
don't
not.
Don't bring that up.
He would be more of, like, a country singer. When we've talked with him, you know, he likes to race cars and hunt and he's a real country bumpkin at heart.
Yeah, so
but
maybe
he spits hip-hop,
he'd be like
though.
Who's that like mix country hip hop artist? Cuz
Nelly? No.
No.
Do a little like
no,
collaboration.
Not Kid Rock, the
Uncle Cracker.
No. You guys are terrible. This is like 10 years ago now. I'm thinking like something closer. But his hip hop name is Deuces.
Cleveland. Yeah, but you know what? Without him in the lineup, maybe that also helped because Clint is somewhat of a polarizing guy.
Yeah,
he's a nice guy, and the players respect him. But the dynamic could potentially be different.
Well, the balance wasn't really there, right? Especially with Ladero and Morris, and like you know, Morris is this like hometown kid, and he's just come on the scene. He's like American Messi and everybody loves him in Seattle. And now here in the playoffs, he's doing all kinds of these great things. And he's got that 1-2 punch going with Ladero. I mean, just to watch a kid come up through his hometown and shine on this, his first season, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and he had so much pressure on him, and Michael Bradley spoke about that yesterday. He spoke about that yesterday and said no one really realized how well he's done under just crazy amounts of pressure from the national team standpoint and from being the Seattle second coming, everything like that. And we spoke with him. He said his goal for the year, he never would tell us this at the beginning, but it was to score 10 goals. And of course, he's surpassed that. And one of the big reasons is he told us that Siggy Schmid has had a pretty profound impact on him. And that the beginning of the year, Siggy pulled him aside and said, you have to remember two things. You obviously want to be professional and you want to be intense and serious, but you have to have fun. And he's like, you're not having fun out there. And you got to enjoy the fact that what you're doing. You're so young, but look at what you get to do. This is your job. And as Jordan said, as soon as he started to kind of balance that, he started playing better. And when he was going through hard stretches, he would always remember what Siggy said about that. So he's sort of this like godfather figure that's omnipresent.
The psychology that comes into sports is so huge when you hear something like that, where it's a mental mindset.
We've heard Josie talk about that too, right? Just like kind of sitting back and enjoying things more than he used to. And I think it's a big thing for these guys, because sometimes you get wrapped up in whatever's going on in that moment. You don't sit back and try to enjoy it as it's happening.
Yeah, that's what Drew Moore said, because obviously he's been in an MLS Cup here before, and he says he's way more nervous now because he knows how difficult it is to get to this point. When it's your first MLS Cup, it's ignorance is bliss, and you're a young kid, you're like, well, this is pretty good, and hey, maybe we'll come back next year.
This is what it's going to be like for the rest of my career.
But he said, told the guys, you know, you saw all the media that's been there. It's been super insane, but they all like it because this is what you've wanted. You want TFC to be a big deal in the city. You want 100 media members.
I wanted to go back when like there was like four of us at the Kia training ground covering practice every day, and like
be like a 9-game losing skid. You're like,
and
all
buying
right.
And buying tickets was like $30 instead of now. I was seeing prices, the cheapest seat
$1,500 in the South Stands.
Well,
that's crazy.
I heard $300 to $350 is the cheapest I've heard people are buying tickets, and even that's crazy.
Especially, for an MLS Cup, I'm in.
And in the cold too, you're not going to be comfortable when you're spending that $300.
The good thing is it's not like Grey Cup where I went and it was 5 hours or whatnot. I always tell people, I say, hey, if you want to watch soccer and you don't know it that well, you don't have to commit that much time. It's great.
2 hours.
Yeah. 2 hours and that's it. Unless you get to extra time like we did against Montreal. But nobody cared.
And you're in the rain and then your producer doesn't tell you look like an idiot on TV. Your hair is a mess.
I saw that picture. How much reaction did you get to that?
I would say I had probably 300 tweets about my hair in that game. And
is that producer still around?
No, he was fired. Oh, okay. No,
he's
a great guy. Great producer, but you know, in the moment, we joke, because I told him if he had said, hey, fix your hair before this interview, I would have been like, no, no, let's do this. Like, let's who cares about my hair? Blah, blah, blah. But then I didn't realize what exactly I look like.
Mad scientist.
But it was blissful rain. The temperature was so perfect and it looked so beautiful.
Yeah, it wasn't cold at all. It was just,
not at all.
It just was consistently raining the whole time. And we were speaking about the cold this time around. And, you know, Michael Bradley said, it's not cold. Cold, as Vanny told us, is a mentality. And when you're out there and you have 36,000 fans cheering for you, you're in MLS Cup, you're hosting it, the adrenaline is so insane that you don't think about the cold, except if you're a goalkeeper and you're standing there the entire time.
Like, I am a goalkeeper of lower value. And
you're a beer league goalie.
I'm a beer league goalkeeper.
Big difference.
But yeah, that's the whole thing, is you just stand there and sit there and you get cold. But the players, 2 minutes into the game, you're not feeling anything. You're not hearing anything.
No.
They'll be fine.
Stefan Fry, though, said he asked the league if he could add any more clothes on, like neck warmers or whatever, any extra sort of things, and they said you can ask the officials, and they were like, no. The referee said no.
Isn't he Swiss?
Yeah.
Shouldn't he be used to the cold? I mean, the Alps and everything?
He should be used to it just from his days here.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, ironically, he's the best person to understand what TFC has gone through, because he speaks about how awful it was during those years. Oh. And, you know, the injury stuff he went through, and then when Bendik came in and sort of took the job from him, and they just he said the best part, he said, when they won the Canadian championship in Montreal. He said that was the highlight.
I hold him in the highest regard. He was one of the bright lights of a crappy team, was Stephen Fry, and then the way he lost his job. But I like how the way he's bounced back and he's become a keeper for Seattle.
He's an interesting guy because, you know, he's kind of like everything that was wrong about this club. He kind of symbolizes it because, like, here you have a good player who was treated improperly, and you never really, it happened over and over again with this team. And it makes me think to the fans and, like, what they've been through since 2007. And it's, the team has this all-for-one moniker, and really, like, those fans, through all those bad years, you kind of wonder what kept them coming around. And I think it's just like that. You know, you built a Toronto soccer community, and as fans here, you kind of just showed up to your seats, and
well,
you had
like
that
the Leafs,
every week.
I guess, right? Yeah. You're like, this is, if you like the sport and you think it's cool, like, you're going to keep coming back. And if it's in your blood and you're one of these people that have been with it forever, I mean, of course, there's a lot of fans now that's like, oh, you know, I had a ton of friends asking me for tickets that are not soccer fans.
Bandwagon.
They're like,
big
wow,
time.
MLS Cup, Toronto's the best. Let's go.
You kind of want that, though, because it just, it builds the league. But yeah, those fans that have, you know, 10 years in the same seats, it's more of a family environment now, and it's become part of their culture. So it's like seeing friends every week. You know you're going to see your buddies, you know you're going to cheer and lose
the
game.
Which is part of the problem with the whole ticket debacle.
It's
week.
Sad.
But seeing, I mean, Dwayne DeRosario on the sidelines of speaking with him, and you kind of are reminded of how far this team has come and how surreal it is. That
a long way.
Yeah, only in the second playoff appearance here at MLS Cup, that it doesn't make any sense, you know? But then I worry that if you don't win MLS Cup, and if you do win MLS Cup, I think a lot of pieces might disperse after this year.
Oh, 100%.
I know Vanny is up for a very big job somewhere else, warmer.
Possibly.
and who knows if Michael Bradley stays or goes to Europe, or, you know, different guys that aren't protected. Mm-hmm. What happens with sort of the core of this
team?
The
expansion draft is on Wednesday. Like, how gutless is that? You win MLS Cup and then it's like, all right.
Hey, you're not protected. You're out.
Pack your bags, Nick Haglund or Clint Irwin. Like, sorry, guys. Thanks for all the big goals and big saves.
No, totally.
It's pretty heartless. But
if you have MLS Cup, you're like, whatever. Yeah. On to the next thing, right?
Exactly.
And getting back to D-Row, like, have you seen his Instagram lately? He is just absolutely loving parading around Toronto with MLS Cup and like going to different shows and stuff.
He's like the mascot.
He's great.
He is.
Team mascot.
Because he was down on the field when they won against Montreal.
Ambassador is the
sort of like part of the team celebrating, which I thought was great.
I wonder if we do see Drake there tomorrow, though. But
I tweeted at him asking him if he was coming, and I got one of my friends to reach out to his producer to see if he was coming.
No response? No.
But you did get a response from Prime Minister Trudeau.
Well, he's actually writing me answers to questions that I have. Because they responded, because, you know, I put it up there. I'm too bad.
Well, that must
Trudeau's
be cool for you, that the PM of the country, you know?
Like, yeah, well, I'm hoping. I mean, like,
but still, he's responding to her and he's taking time.
Well, I mean, his people are responding to her.
let's look at the positive and say he's responding.
Well, they wrote me back and they said, you know, he might be able to talk with you if you send in some questions. I said, all right, well, I got these two. Mm-hmm. And even just one answer. Like, when's the latest? I'm like, literally 8 p.m. on Saturday night. Yeah. Like, as soon as you send me it, I can read it on TV.
Right.
So
as soon as possible would be great. But Trudeau, like, I'm kind of happy that he's not, like, moving heaven and earth to try and come to this game just as, like, a good PR kind of thing.
You think if Montreal was in it, he'd be there? That's what
possible.
People are saying.
That's a good question.
He wasn't at Grey Cup, so that's when it... Like, the light switch turned on for me. I thought he's definitely not.
Well, there's other politicians in this city, like Mayor John Tory. John Tory, like, forgot about TFC all season long.
He's
and
all
it's like,
over
oh, they're
him.
In the final. Look at me wearing my scarf.
Yeah.
Well, he is the mayor of the city, so you would expect if he ignored TFC all season like he has, and he didn't
and
say
Norm
anything.
Kelly, the sixth god,
and he doesn't say anything through this whole week. Wouldn't that be weird?
Then you're like, okay, come on. Soccer's cool.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, nah.
Yeah, no. The sixth god, Norm Kelly, just like all over the place. And then finally, he's loving TFC.
A lot of people were like, yeah, Drake will be here. He's an MLSC employee. He probably doesn't have a concert.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it works for Drake. I'm like, oh, well, Toronto's playing. I guess I'll take my jet up there.
Yeah, I'll just...
It could be like that for him. You never know.
I'll just
hop
in.
That's what I assume.
Yeah.
His courtside seats aren't really the same. And they wouldn't be as warm this time around either.
No.
Oh, he'd get a luxury box.
So yeah. What kind of coverage is this getting down south? Like, we always kind of wonder that with Raptor games and like how much the Raptors are being paid attention to. Like, how much is MLS Cup becoming a bigger part of the American conscious?
Yeah, I think it's definitely growing. And that's from corporate lunch commitment from Fox, but also ESPN. And then you see Univision, Unimas, all these different broadcasters. And we were with everyone last night, from TSN to all the names I just mentioned. And everyone, it's a sport that is growing so fast. And the league is growing so fast. And with expansion, and I'd say interest with the U.S. men's national team certainly helps MLS. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really big about this game. How many U.S. stars we have. Josie Altidore, Michael Bradley, Jordan Morris. And it's not even just them. Then you're like, people that don't know some of these guys like Javinko and Ladero. Yeah. And then everyone beyond that. It's it's not just such a niche sport anymore and sort of a niche league, which people would say, oh, MLS, whatnot. But it's, I would say, and this is crazy to say in a Toronto market, but I would say MLS and soccer is getting bigger than NHL in the States.
Yeah, I would not
bigger
doubt
than
that.
NHL.
Yeah,
I mean the NHL is.
Who would have thought?
I know.
It's strange in the way that it in the South it doesn't seem to have taken as
they
much
try
as people
so
thought
hard.
It would.
And not in any dig against NHL. Yeah. It's just I think when you look at a sport that's so accessible, and the lack of relatively speaking head injuries. Mm-hmm. Issues like domestic violence that might be prevalent in other big sports in the States. It's star power. You see the guys, they're accessible. They want to be a part of the media. It's I personally love it because I've covered a bunch of different sports, and with these guys, they're so respectful and professional, and they will take as much time to answer as many questions as you have because we're all working together to make this big. And that's what's great about working with ESPN is like we are all going for the same cause. We want soccer to be a big deal.
Yeah. And I think like if you were to take the Premier League and just put it in the U.S. or in North America, say, it would be, I think it would be number one, like right away.
Well, the money's there. And that's why I feel that the players, even the ones making the big dollars here, that's peanuts compared to the NHL players, like the average NHL
really
player,
right,
he might be, a little bit of, ignorant and not really ask those questions because he thinks he's above it. Whereas, a player like Nick Hagelin, who's making, 50,000, 60,000, he's easily more accessible because he wants that attention. Yeah. He's
even
a part
guys
of it.
Like Steven Gerrard, I know pretty well from this year, he was just so easy to talk to. And you talk with David Villa, like these guys love the league. And it's been exciting because I'm interested to see what the next wave of sort of the big DP stars are that come in because
the age,
because they want
players.
Them obviously younger and Jovinko. Get them in their prime.
Yeah, hopefully more of them are Canadian and American, and that would really, I think, that's what we need the most is getting more domestic stars to really push this over the top, get more national pride around it. Julie, been a pleasure having you in here today.
Yeah, it's been great talking soccer with you guys.
I know, and tomorrow's going to be huge. It's going to be a lot of fun. They're closing down the streets in Liberty Village.
Oh, nice.
After the game, if TFC does win, I'm curious to see what happens. I think fans might
storm
the pitch.
City will blow up.
Yeah, the city might blow up. Liberty Village is
going
to blow up.
People might storm the pitch.
It might be like a Rocky scene where everybody just plows into the
that would be
the,
pretty
the
exciting. Right?
Hanging on the goalpost.
It might be, the South Stands are just going to erupt. But really appreciate you coming in today. It's a pleasure having you around and keep up the great work.
Of course. Thanks, guys. Great to be back in the city that is amazing.
the six. Back in the six and with a championship on hand as well. We'll be back on TFC Pitch Side. More coming after this.
This one's for you, Brian. We've seen Ziggy walking around the training ground. I'm not sure if you've seen him yet. I'm just wondering, do you think he's played a bigger role or you've played a bigger role in Seattle being here today?
Well, when I see him, I'm going to give him a big hug. I think your question's a little unfair because I think both of us have done a very good job of putting this franchise into this position. So you guys have to remember that I was part of Ziggy's staff for the 7.5 years. And I hope that my contributions to him, making him a successful coach, you guys all understand. I know Ziggy and I, when we have our conversations, he was very appreciative to me. He allowed me to grow as a coach, and so we don't have any issues. Last time when we were down in LA, we went out and had coffee, me and Tommy Dutrenzig, and it's just like old times, just talking soccer, because Zig loves to talk soccer. So, you know, the emotional side and the human element side is when Zig gets fired, I get the job. So somebody has to get fired for me to get my opportunity. So that's the story that, you know, those first couple of days, yeah, you think about. And it's definitely a bummer. But at the end of the day, he understands this business. I understand this business. There will be a day when I might not have a job, and you just deal with it. And I think both of our contributions to Ozzy, to Jordan, to, you know, all the stuff that he did for our club, you know, off the field as well, I think we can both share in that.
Happy to be back on TFC Pitch Side. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos joining us now, friend of the show. The MLS analyst, Matthew Doyle, who is in town here in Toronto. Matt, like mid-season, when you saw TFC play Seattle, kind of a bore 1-1 draw in early July, didn't really seem like these were two teams that would end up meeting an MLS Cup final.
No, but that's the glory of MLS, right? Like, it's a league that's constantly evolving even during the course of the season. But that said, I think everybody knew that both of these teams had a lot of talent, and if things kind of clicked, that they could be, and maybe even should be, at or near the top of the conference. I mean, there was a time there with Toronto FC, I thought they were going to win the Supporters Shield, and obviously that didn't work down the stretch for them, but I'm sure they would trade that off in exchange for this. I mean, and as for Seattle, they were pretty bad the first, you know, half of the year. But
yeah,
they were the type of bad where you could look at it and say, you know what, I think they're only really missing one piece. And they went out and got that piece, and now here we are.
I read an interesting article on The Guardian today about, you know, how to make the blueprint of a successful franchise. And do you agree with it where it says it has to adopt a character of two identities, a regular season team and a playoff team? You have to be two instead of one?
That's an interesting concept. I haven't had a chance to read that article yet.
Just in general, though, like that concept of having to be two different teams.
Yeah, I mean, there does seem to be some merit to it, because when you look at like an FC Dallas, or the Red Bulls, they've been the two best regular season teams over the last 3 years, and neither has made it to MLS Cup. So there can be, I think that's a pretty decent way of thinking about it. I do wonder if that is going to change substantially in the coming years, as teams get deeper and better because of the injection of TAM and because of the additional influence of academy players, guys who are going to come into the team at 18, 19 years old as fully formed professional soccer players, able to contribute at a high level. That's something that I don't think MLS has ever really had before the last couple of years. And I think it's going to change maybe that sort of the dual nature aspect of the season.
You know, we're in a season where, you know, last year's MLS Cup finalists did not even qualify for the postseason this time around. And it got me thinking as to why that is. And now, learning some of the, you know, this being the first year of TFC Pitch Side, you know, learning more of the cap penalties. Well, I guess they're not penalties, but, you know, a lot of bonuses come into play when you make a big cup run. So it ends up hurting your cap for the next season. Is that, like, how difficult is it going to be for Seattle and Toronto next year to maintain this level?
Yeah, but that was more their fault. I don't think that had anything to do with cap specifics and team building. And I think that Toronto, I think, is going to return 90-95% of the same guys next season, and should actually be a better team next year. Seattle is a little different because they do have some older players I think they want to unload and sort of fill in that 20 to 25 year old age range. But you qualify for CCL, you win MLS Cup, you actually get more allocation money to use to build your roster because of it. So I think that both of these teams will be fine in 2017, and expect both of them to be in the hunt again.
Matt Doyle, the MLS analyst, our guest here on TFC Pitchside. So, Matt, getting into the specifics of the game, what's one matchup that you're really looking at that can really play a big part in the winner on Saturday?
Well, it's less a matchup and it's more just an area of the field. Ozzie Alonso has a sprained knee. He's questionable for the game, and they had to sub him out for the last 15 minutes against Colorado, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. And this is not a guy who comes out of the game unless a body part is literally about to fall off of him. So that has me concerned for Seattle. And I think that if he is, anything less than about 90%, the Sounders could be in a little bit of trouble because both Jozy Altidore and Sebastian Giovinco love to work in that area right in the middle of the pitch. And those are two guys who can be, pretty darn effective when they have a little time and space there. So I guess I'll say Ozzie Alonso versus the world is the matchup that I think could end up deciding this one.
Do you think the Sounders will be able to pin back Toronto and kind of stifle their offense?
Well, that is a worry, right? Because anytime you play a 3-5-2 and you go up against a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-3-1, you're going to have 2v1s on the flanks, which is why the 3-5-2 went out of style for a good long while in world soccer. And I think that will be on the menu for the Sounders. They will want to get Jovan Jones and Tyrone Mears forward. The issue, though, is that especially with Mears, when he overlaps, that creates a big gap between him and the right center back. And, of course, that is where Giovinco loves to get the ball, in that hole right there. And he's almost impossible to contain. So everything is risk-reward when you talk about trying to get those guys up the field. I think both teams have to figure out a way to do it. And I think those will probably end up producing some of the most exciting moments of the game.
The Sounders have a physically imposing back line. They're big. And we've seen before Jozy just bullies his defenders. Do you think he'll have the same kind of impact against a back line that can kind of dictate the pace in the air and on the ground?
I mean, he's not going to ragdoll those guys the way he did Cabrera. but Jozy, and look, they're both better in the air than Jozy is. Jozy's not great in the air, even though he, if you look at him, the way his build, his athleticism, you think he would be. But what Jozy does so effectively is his hold-up play. He comes off the back line. He doesn't, he doesn't put his body into the central defender like Drogba does and just hold the ball right there. He actually takes a few steps into that channel between the central defense and central midfield, gets on the ball there, and then is able to use his agility to turn and burn. And I think both Chad Marshall and especially Roman Torres will struggle if they allow him to get on the ball in those spots. And again, to me, that comes back to Ozzie Alonso's health. If Ozzie Alonso is helping and controlling that area, Jozy will not be receiving a lot of great passes there. It's a lot of questions to have, 24 hours out from the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, and I said last week, right after the Montreal game, that Seattle might end up pipping this 2-1. I just don't like how TFC started both of those games against Montreal. Very, maybe they did have the run of play, but not as strong as you would like to be defensively. And the way Morris and Ladero are playing right now, I feel if TFC aren't locked in early on, Seattle can get that early goal.
Yeah, there's been a bit of swap from TFC.
It's a good word to use, slop. Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lack of combination play through central midfield. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Bradley hits as good a long ball as anybody in the league, and you want to have him pinging those diagonals around and pulling teams apart. But I thought there were a lot of times, especially as you said, in the first half hour or so of those games against Montreal, where they, instead of driving the tempo forward, they needed to settle it down a little bit and establish a rhythm. And I think they have to do that tomorrow. If they don't it will lead to breakouts in the other direction. And maybe the only guy in the league who's as fast as Dominic Aduro is Jordan Morris. And that'll be a problem for literally everyone on the DFC back line.
Yeah, I think so too. We got to get a prediction from you before we go.
I believe in home field advantage. That's one. And the other is I think that my rule of thumb has been to pick the team with the best player, the best guy on the field all postseason. And so far this postseason, that's been Jose Altidore. So I think Toronto will win MLS Cup. I think it'll be wide open. I think it'll be a lot of fun in a way that Cup finals usually aren't.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You haven't had a great record predicting winners.
He predicted TFC over Montreal.
Did he?
Yeah.
My memory's foggy.
No, he was right on TFC over Montreal.
Okay. I was about to say you might have been the poison chalice there, giving them your approval.
I have not had a good 2016, but I feel like I'm starting to finish strong. So maybe Toronto fans can take some heart from that.
It's all good. If you were perfect, then you'd be making millions at in Vegas. So we, you know, we forgive.
True. Matt, really appreciate you joining us all throughout the season. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you around. Can't wait to see you down at BMO Field. This is we'll be talking again, whether it's this year or next. Really appreciate you coming on and joining us throughout the season.
My pleasure, guys.
There he is, at MLS analyst Matt Doyle Thomas. We are going to have a live show tomorrow, 12 to 1, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. That being match day Saturday.
We taking calls?
Yeah, we're gonna try and take some calls. So if you are listening to this, please give us a shout.
And it'd be even
better Saturday afternoon.
And even better if you're already intoxicated and you call in, because that would just be entertaining.
Exactly. I think before what we've usually done on our match previews, obviously they haven't been as guest heavy throughout the season, but we do like to do three keys to the game. I'm just throwing this on you, real late here.
Okay.
So you might three have a real keys late to answer. The game. And as I mentioned there, as Matt mentioned there a little bit, you know, I think watching back some Sounders games this week, you notice that they love to do their attacking down the left side of the pitch. So that for TFC would be Betashore's end. And I mean, with Morris and Jovan Jones, they got some guys who can really bomb through there on the left side. And I think that pace is a problem.
For me, one of the keys to the game is Michael Bradley being able to dictate and control the middle of the park. I think that is the key to everything that goes right for TFC. It's Bradley being the boss and people feeding off his intensity, his teammates feeding off his intensity. So Bradley bossing the middle of the field.
And finally, you know, I think the other one obviously is Altidore Giovinco against Roman Torres and Chad
Definitely.
Marshall. I mean, that's going to be for TFC, certainly the place that they want to absolutely dominate on the field. And we'll see if they do it. I mean, I feel like Giovinco, you know, he had the big game in New York against FC, but other than that, his playoffs haven't been otherworldly like we've seen him at other times with TFC. And I wonder if there's more of an injury problem that we don't know about, but he hasn't been the game breaker in the same way that Altidore has.
Well, I'll look at that as a positive that, you know, you don't have to look at Giovinco to be the be-all, end-all of the team. Naturally, he's the best player on the pitch, and
it highlights how Montreal played against TFC, right? Because they had two defenders on Giovinco almost at all times when he got the ball.
But look what happens when you do that. It opens up, and it's difficult to put two players on each of them, because mm-hmm. then how much space opens up? And we've seen all season long that someone always steps up to the occasion. Who would have thought Benoit Cheyrou would score that goal?
Not me.
Who would have thought Nick Hagelin would get a goal in that game? Hmm. I still didn't think that, but I'm just saying.
Should have had two.
But that's the key to the season. Someone always steps up, and it'd be interesting to see who will do it this time.
Yeah, and I don't foresee three set-piece goals coming for TFC this time around.
No.
That was just an absolute bleep show for Montreal on their set-piece defending. And I'm sure, you know, if you're Mauro Biello, I mean, you're looking back even today, 10 days ago, and you're like, we scored 5 goals in an aggregate series and we lost.
Well, that's the thing for TFC is that's why my prediction was TFC to win 4-2 is because I just think that they can outscore their opponent. Doesn't matter if they go down first. It doesn't matter how many goals their opponent scores. They seem to be able to score more. And they've had, 17 goals in the playoffs? And that's the entire Western Conference statistic in goals?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
17 goals for in the playoffs, Western Conference.
Every team
entirety has scored 17 goals. Philip tweets in at DataReach 590 says, Betashore Zavaleta against Jordan Morris is going to be one of the big matchups, as well as Altidor versus Seattle's back four.
Betashore is going to have a big game.
I think, you know, the one thing that people continue to talk about is, and I think we just got a tweet in from SF, and he says, Toussaint Ricketts coming off the bench will be a game changer.
He has proved to be time and time again.
117 minutes played in the postseason. He has 2 goals. So he has become the absolute super sub that TFC would have wanted when they signed him.
And you think, definition of a super sub.
Armando Cooper, Toussaint Ricketts, how big they've been for this club is unbelievable. And, you know, good on Ricketts, especially for a guy who maybe assumed coming back to MLS would mean a starting role. But he's absolutely embraced being a super sub, and he's done a hell of a job with it as well.
That pace coming on in the 70th minute when you have dead legs on the opponent's side of the pitch, it's been electric. And watching it from field level, it's seeing him move and cut and the way he can just turn it on. He's a game breaker.
Absolutely. And tomorrow we'll talk more on our show about, you know, what this means for the city of Toronto, what this means for soccer fans in Toronto. I think we all have our own unique stories. I've never, you know, lied to you guys about the fact that I'm not necessarily a day one-er. I was more of a casual TFC fan when they first came around, and I didn't really get the bug until I started doing more technical stuff alongside Dan Dunleavy and Bob Yerushi a few years ago, you know, manning the board for them at BMO Field on a lot of Saturdays for our Sportsnet 590 The Fan broadcast.
A younger reach,
and finally then got the opportunity to start covering the team in 2014. But I want to get more into what it means for soccer fans in Toronto to not only have this here this weekend, but what that meant last week against Montreal and that whole Eastern Conference final leg. I think that's one of the storylines that needs to be talked about ahead of tomorrow's match.
And, you know, anything can happen in 90 minutes or 120 minutes, but it should be, Toronto should celebrate, and not just soccer fans, that it's very rare to have a cup final in your city. So the build up to that, we want to hear those stories. We want to hear where you're going to be. It should be a celebration of Toronto.
It should be. And Toronto FC is hosting a pregame street party and march to the match ahead of the 2016 MLS Cup. So basically they're shutting down part of the area at Liberty Village. And they will do the march to the match. DJ Scratch Bastid is going to be spinning the
Bastid?
The turntables. Yeah, Bastid.
Nice.
Bastid. D-Row's going to be there. Danny Dicchio, Jimmy Brennan. So it should be a lot of fun. We're going to try and make that as well. And maybe just be in the area.
We have to be down there early. Yeah, definitely.
We usually are. But for Emil Delich, for Thomas Michalakos, I'm Dan Riccio. Thanks to Julie Stewart-Binks. Thanks to Matthew Doyle. This has been TFC Pitchside on the eve of MLS Cup. Join us noon to 1 Saturday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I don't want no picture with the president. I just want to talk to the man. Speak for the boys in a bando. But when I'm running, walking again. Apologize if I'm hopping again. I know these things happen often, but I'm back on the scene. I was lost in a dream as I write this a team down in Austin. I've been building me a house back home in the South, ma. Won't believe what it's costing, and it's fit for a king, right? That I can know, can sing and explain all the pain that it cost him. My 16 should have came with a coffin. Fuck the fame and the fortune. Well, maybe not the fortune, but one thing is for sure, the fame is exhausting. That's why I moved away. I needed privacy, surrounded by the trees in Ivy League. Students that's recruited higher league, thinking you do you and I do me. Crib has got a big old back of yard. Sitting up, stand outside and pass cigars. Filled with marijuana, laughing hard. Thankful that they friends are platinum star. In the driveway, there's no rapper cars. Just some shit, they from back and forth.
just some space position back and forth. Welcome to the shelter, this is pure. We'll help you if you felt too insecure to be the star you always knew you were. Wait, I think police is at the door.
Okay, the neighbors think I'm selling dope. I guess the neighbors think I'm selling dope. Selling dope.